the Making Up the Numbers podcast.
Making Up the Numbers podcast is sponsored by Hope Technology, Revolution Bike Park, and the world's finest independent mountain bike magazine, Single Track. So you look pretty focused in the start gate. Was that focus or was that bricking it?
No, I felt good in the start gate, to be honest. Really excited, really keen. Warm-up went well, everything was good. And I would say I was maybe just a bit too keen, a bit too hungry. I didn't go out the gate amazingly and was a bit tight throughout the couple first corners, but after that...
There's a table, like a table just off the start.
Yeah, that's it.
And some people, like, you could see some people were really keen and they landed to flat almost on the other side. And then you saw, like, Pierron and Brunier, they just...
Just floated. Yeah. That was one of the bits where I was pedaling in spots where I shouldn't have been and I was just a bit too keen there, really. When you know it's the final and you know you've qualified well and you know you're on TV, I mean, you have to focus solely on yourself and hitting your lines, but there's always that little bit of spark that just makes you go that bit faster. It's a really strange feeling. I don't know how you can kind of describe it, but it definitely pushes you on more, that's cool. For sure.
Talk us through the run then.
Didn't last for long. as I say, went out the start all right, a bit tight.
Yeah.
Had the top after that pretty good.
Were you doing that inside just before they disappeared into the woods? Were you inside in that berm?
Right at the top.
Yeah, so he did the first two corners, and just before you went into the wood, there was like that big left-hander.
Were you
inside?
Yeah,
in
I was on inside on that.
Yeah.
I think most were, to be honest. There's a couple who wasn't. Did all that. And there was actually a line I changed in the morning, because the line I was on, the little rut on the outside of it had blown out. Someone's gone over the top of it, followed by another few riders had gone over the top of it. So it was just... blown out, so that morning I had to make a change of line.
Right.
I practiced it just to try and hit the line, but then when I come into it, my race run, I slowed up a lot, had it pretty slow, and just after that I started trying to shift on again.
Yeah.
And was trying to basically make up for, because I knew I was slow in the previous part, and that's exactly where I crashed just after that.
So what actually happened in the crash? Because...
Yes.
Looked like it could have been any number of things.
Yeah, a few people have said different things. One person said, oh, did you blow your hand off the bar? The other person said, oh, did you have to jump off because the tree was coming too quickly towards me?
You got some nice scratches on your arms.
Yeah, I got a few. But now I come around the corner. There's a route that crosses pretty much the whole track, and you have to turn across it. And I turned the front over it. Thought the back was going to follow beautifully, but instead, no, I've moved my body weight far forward, like towards the front of the bike to take the next impact and push through down a drop. And meanwhile, the back gone light, caught the start of the route, slid along the route, and by this time the back was coming round and I just had to abort, really. It was coming right round on me. It was
fast crash.
Yeah, nothing I could do. It happened like that. I didn't know.
I'm going to see if I can find it on Red Bull.
Yeah.
So you were 2.6 back when you crashed. And I reckon I had looked at it. I think you lost about 10 seconds.
Yeah, I had a look myself. I worked it out to be about that. Because I did get straight back on and I pushed on then.
You did push on, didn't you?
Yeah, because I was just trying to salvage any points I could.
What was that? Was that like... pure annoyance, or was that?
Did you lose
your cool a bit? Or, you know,
I certainly lost my cool and my focus, and the whole thing's just broken up, really. But my reaction is just still just get down to the bottom as fast as you can. I've learned like the hard way in the past that I've given up, and I could have still got a few points or whatever. So I think it's always just give 100%. So I went down, got back on, and gave 100%. And I did manage to score a few points, so that helps. You know, you never know, that might be the
UCI
difference.
Points?
World Cup overall.
World Cup overall,
that's it. So you never know when 3 points later in the year might make a difference between a top 20 or whatever. Like, it can add up to make the difference. So I just cracked on as hard as I could after that.
Was it 3:14?
3:14 I did, yeah.
So if you take the 10 seconds off, that's 3 or 4?
Yeah, top 20 that would have been, which was what I was going for, really.
Yeah. You're in the mix there, aren't you?
Yeah, right in the mix. It's really good to see that. And just such a little mistake, but it pays. So
any injuries from it?
No, I luckily enough, I got away with it. I slid just into the ground, no trees, nothing like that, so that's lovely. I just got a few scrapes and bruises, but nothing that will slow me down.
Cool. And do you wear armour? Or is this...
It's a funny one, because I normally always wear elbow pads.
Yeah.
And that day was the first time I didn't. And of course, I landed on both my elbows and ripped them apart.
Everyone wears knee pads, but it's the elbows that get it.
I know.
I did a training day with Jack Redding at... Where was it at? Yeah, at Mulfrey. It's the only time I've ever not worn elbow pads. Like
the only time you put your elbow pad, your elbows as well.
Yeah. I ended up... I just remember ringing my wife, and I'd had like a few bad injuries. And we'd spent a wedding anniversary in hospital because of a crash. And I just remember ringing her and saying, everything's fine. Yeah. Just stopping in at the hospital on the way home and getting my arm stitched up. Oh, it's fine. Don't worry. And she was, horrified. Like, yeah. But always worn elbow pads ever since then.
Yeah, it's probably a sensible option for sure. Decision.
So have you watched the live feedback?
Yeah, I did. As soon as I flew home the following day, got home, I was knackered, so I just put the feet up and watched the whole live feed through. I think it's important to analyse it, see what everyone was doing, because when we're there racing, like, I don't get to see any of it. Well, no, not really. Like, I was warming up and then racing, and I got to see, like, the last 10 rides or something like that, but, I mean, there's so much going on there, and the big screen's quite far away. You can't see what's going on. So, no, I always get home and analyse the race, see what lines people were on, how they were riding it, and I just think you can learn quite a bit from it, really.
Yeah. So Loic took the win. I think a few people have predicted he'll win the whole thing this year. It's the only thing missing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, is the consistency from him. He looked brilliant all weekend. Didn't only look fast, but really smooth and in control.
Yeah.
And controlled.
Danny second.
Yeah.
That to me, that Danny Hart run, that reminded me of Danny 2 seasons ago. You remember the out in Andorra when he was
a bit more, a bit more rowdy.
Yeah, I was talking to him up at the Hamsterley race, and I said I didn't know if, like, last season he looked a lot more in control. There were no wild moments, and I didn't know if he was going for like the top 5 overall or whatever. He said he wasn't, but it was good to see, I suppose. Yeah, I don't know if that's the right thing to say, but to see Danny riding like that right on the edge.
Yeah, I think that comes down to confidence. If you're 100% confident, you're really prepared to push that edge.
Right.
If there's something not quite right, the bike's not quite set up, or mentally you're not quite 100%, or physically whatever, then you kind of just step back that little bit.
Yeah.
Safety reasons, I imagine. It's just you've not quite got the edge. But Danny definitely looks like he's sharp this year, and he definitely looks like he's confident in everything around him, and he's really prepared to push that edge and ride the limit.
Big talking point, obviously, is Bruni and Danny both running the 29 front 650B rear.
Both went 1 and 2.
Yeah, and that means that the first two Enduro World Series were won like that as well.
Yeah.
And then 1-2 at the first World Cup.
Martin Myers was that, isn't
it? Yeah. Where was he this weekend?
Yeah, everyone thought he was going to turn up.
Yeah, I'm sure he said somewhere he was going to do the first two rounds of each and then make a decision about what he was doing, but...
No idea, I haven't heard anything.
I suppose if you've won the two Enduro World Series, you're in a good position to win.
I think he wants to really win the EWS overall, while Sam Hill still in
right,
it.
Yeah.
I think he wants to make sure he gets that ticked off before Sam retires.
Yeah.
But then the other thing that I haven't heard anyone say or him say or anything, but when I was speaking to my mechanic the other day, he was like, well, how incredible would it be if he won the EWS overall and the World Cup overall in the same year? Just imagine that. Winning one race of each in the year, everyone talked about it, and it probably got him on a great contract. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him give that a go within the next couple of years.
Yeah.
That'd be quite something if he manages that.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. So the 29 front 650B rear, have you tried it?
I haven't, no.
No? What are your thoughts on it?
Without trying, I can't give you any detailed reports on it, but it's obviously not slow, that's for sure. I know with a few bike brands, I think it was that started, I may be wrong, but more because they literally didn't have a 29-inch frame.
To fit the back wheel in.
So they just went and had one instead of two. But that's obviously not the case with Specialized or Saracen, because I know Matt Walker, Danny's teammate, is on the 429.
Yeah.
And I know Specialized have just developed this bike.
Yeah.
New 429-inch wheels or now 650B. So God knows without trying it. It's obviously fast. It's an interesting theory. You've got the front to truck over stuff, but you've got the rear to steer better. I'm happy with 29 back and front. And I haven't got the time or the equipment to go out and spend a lot of time testing something else.
Well, one man who's been running this setup for ages now is Chris Porter, Mr. Mojo Rising, Mr. Geometron Bikes. And we've got Chris on the phone now. Evening, Chris.
Hello, George. How you doing?
Very good, thank you. Very good. You've been running the 29 front 650B rear setup for a bit. Can you talk us through the advantages of that?
You could say it in two ways. You could talk about the advantages of that setup or the disadvantages of others. In saying that, you've also got to bear in mind that what suits one person isn't going to suit everyone.
Yeah.
But if I just talk through what I find when I'm riding it, because that's the relevant thing for me, and if I find it, then some other riders are going to find it too. So, when I came across the sort of odd wheel size thing whilst trying to get onto a 27.5 setup years ago, and couldn't fit the 27.5 rear wheel into the bike. So it was a ride on a Foxy forward geometry bike with a big front wheel jammed into a Fox 26-inch fork with the fork brace cut out with a hacksaw. That was the first time I tried it.
Okay.
Felt really weird. It felt like it wasn't steering enough. It felt like I was struggling to get around the turns. And on one of my timing tracks, I had a massive crash, threw the dummy out the pram, kicked the bar straight, jumped back on the bike, finished the track. And it was only after I'd passed my normal finish point with the stopwatch that I noticed, hang on a minute, that's the same as my fastest ever time. So I had to go back up and do it again, tried to be a bit more careful where I'd had the massive crash. And it was a really big advantage. So moving from the sort of two paired wheels to a 29, that went through another step. So from when we first built the Geometron, which, you know, was, it should have been the answer to all our dreams. It pretty much was. We were all going faster everywhere on it.
Yeah.
And then we realized, hang on a minute, Fox have come out with a 180 fork, and we put the 180 fork on and it steered even better. Of course, we didn't use any more travel. The air spring shape works for 160. When you try and get 180 out of it, it doesn't. So we were still using 160 travel, but the bike was higher at the front. So there's one of the advantages. It's quite a complex one. So maybe we'll come back to that one, and we'll start with the simple stuff. If you believe that 29 wheels rollover bumps better, then you've got to believe that they're going to be faster over certain types of bumps in certain speed type scenarios. And if we need the rollover on the front wheel, because we are behind the front wheel, and when the front wheel hits the contact, when the front wheel contact patch hits the bump and slows the bike down, we are forcing it into the ground. We certainly need that bigger wheel and better rollover for the front. look to the back of the bike, the wheel is behind us. There's no weight on it. When we hit the contact, when the contact patch hits the bump edge on the front, the rear wheel's got no weight on it.
Yeah.
So it pulls over just fine. Then we go back to that same statement. If we believe that the 29 wheels roll over bumps better, so they do not slow down over bumps, then they also do not speed up over trail features. So if you want to be traveling along a really technical trail where there's no room to pedal, a lot of stuff going on, you know, the kind of bandwidth of what's coming at you is so fast and so packed that you literally have to keep feet level and try and aim for combinations of features and trail. If you're doing that with a 29er, you're not gaining. But with the 27.5 rear wheel, that working of the rear wheel on the trail actually does have some benefit.
So are you saying that the 650B rear wheel will pick up speed better than the 29?
Shit, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. But for me, you know, we always come back to that caveat. Yeah, yeah, definitely. If you're looking to find speed on a trail on a 29er wheel, you've literally got to find bigger obstacles to use to play with. So, yeah, on my mind, yes, I'd say it does.
So I think I've heard you talk as well before about turning the arc of the two different arcs of the two wheels in the corners. How does that affect it?
So that's going back to that complicated point I was alluding to a minute ago. So if you imagine when you turn the bike from left to right and from right to left, and the bike, the front wheel flops this way and that way, and the whole bike is leaning over. If you imagine the rear axle describing an arc, it describes an arc that sort of reaches its maximum height at when the bike is pointing dead ahead, and it falls away to the right and it falls away to the left. So it describes a small arc. Yeah. And if you imagine the head tube doing the same thing, but the head tube is much higher and it describes a much bigger, wider arc as you lean the bike over.
Yeah.
So you end up with the whole frame of the bike describes a sort of cone shaped arc. I described it as a roll axis. The motorcycle designers described the roll axis as something different, but I describe it as a roll axis. The steeper that arc, so the higher the front end in relation to the rear axle, the more steering you're going to get from that rear wheel when you're leaned over. And that's the thing for me that is the key to why I like the 27.5 rear, even with the 29 front, because I find that changing the front wheel to a 29 upsets the steering less than changing the rear wheel to a 29. There's all sorts of reasons why, but that's the one I think.
Cool.
Sorry, go on.
And have you found any disadvantages with it? I think I heard somebody say something about on jumps, it can be difficult on jumps to manage.
No, I don't see that. I really don't see that at all. I can't see any sort of physics or physical reason why that should be a problem. And I just don't see that at all. I'm not the kiddie for the jumps anymore, but I certainly don't see. I didn't see like Bruni or Danny Hart struggling with it, to be honest. And you know, I don't see Martin Mice struggling with it either. You know,
well, that's what I was going to ask you next. I was going to ask you, what did you observe about Danny and Loic's bikes at the weekend?
What I saw straight away about Loic's run, I mean, apart from the fact his bike was really composed, and there's another good point on that, so remind me to come back to that in a minute. what I noticed most of all, apart from the fact that Loic and Danny were wearing pretty much skin suits, which would have a bigger impact. It's going to have a bigger impact on the time than the 27.5 to 29 wheel pair, for sure.
Right.
But if you look at what Loic was wearing, he was wearing white pants, or white at the top. And you look, the first time the camera pans and follows him down the track, you can see he's got burn marks on the ass already on the 27.5 wheel. So he has no room to run a 29 wheel on that bike. If he wants to run a 29 wheel in that bike, he's going to have to do two things. He is going to have to stay 15 mil higher. And if he wants to remain in the same riding position, then that means the bottom bracket and the handlebars must rise by 15 millimeters. If that happens and he rises the bottom bracket and his handlebars by 15 millimeters, then the front wheel, in order to compensate, is going to have to go forward a long, long way. Now, I wouldn't argue with that. I'd say, you know, the front wheels should all be a bit further away. But Loic was in his comfortable position. He felt confident behind the contact patch of the front wheel when he was low enough to be buzzing his ass on a 27.5. He can't run a 29 on that bike. Yeah. And
I can see the benefits for Loic with the 27.5 rear lock, because his riding natural riding position is quite far over the back of the bike, so he's the kind of rider who would struggle with ass buzzing his ass on a bigger wheel a lot. The same with Danny being quite a short rider. You know, the short riders have always struggled to get on with the 29ers more because of literally the simple reason of buzzing their ass.
Yeah, I think packaging is really important. I just went to a smaller size bike this week just to try something, and somebody was using my XL bike for a demo, and it had a 29 rear wheel in, and immediately it feels more dynamic because it's a smaller bike. But the downside of that is that I need to get down behind the back more because the front wheel is closer to me, so I need to move further back, and I'm immediately buzzing my ass everywhere. And again, this is another reason why I'd run the 27.5. Some guys don't need to do it.
That was going to be my next question, Chris. Do you think for a taller guy, like, say, a Minar or Joe here, do you think that it would be an advantage, or are they still better going on 29 to 29?
To be honest, I don't. You should take the two questions separately. If it's a packaging issue and you need the bottom bracket to be low because the front wheel's too close, then it's still going to be an issue. I mean, you've still got to get down to a certain height to make your center of gravity in the right place behind the front wheel. So it's a separate thing. I'd say Minar would still ride well on a 29 pair. He would ride well on a 27.5 pair and did. He's ridden well on a 26 pair, and he'd ride well on 29, 27.5. You know, the fact that Greg won almost first time out on his 29 V10 is no surprise, really. You know, he's won at Fort William, you know, quite a few times in the past. You know, he's a pretty damn good rider. I don't think, you know, it's not about the size of the rider. I think you should try it. If it works for you, that's great. And if it doesn't, you try what works for you. So, and that's, you know, that's another point. You know, I just don't think enough guys are training with a stopwatch, you know, just because you can find that stuff out. I've really enjoyed sort of looking at what Nico Mullally's been doing this year with the hybrid and the 29 testing, because, you know, he's actually testing stuff and reporting his times. To me, that's really interesting and important. So.
Cool. And do you think that this is the end of it, or do you think that we could see the return of a 26-inch wheel out back?
The question is probably mute because there's no tyres. You have to run the wheel size that has the best tyre for the job. Full stop. You have to run the best tyre. It's still one of the most important things on a downhill or bicycle race bike. So you have to run the tyre that's the best. And if that happens to be 29 up front, 27.5 out back, I'm really happy about that. That's great. If I have to learn how to run 29 pairing, you know, I'll bitch and moan for a bit, but we'll get around it.
The other way to to potentially see it is that they make the best tyres around the best wheel size?
They make the best tyres upon the wheel size that allows them to sell another whole bike to the customer, is what I would say. That's the only reason we went 29, then 27.5, then 29 again, and now the at least hybrid, you can just bang a 27.5 in your 29 that already has too high a bottom bracket, and you'll be golden. You'll have a slacker head angle, your bottom bracket will be in the right place, and your life will be good. The only bad thing is that your seat angle will be wrong, but if you're downhill racing, again, it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter.
Chris, thank you very much for your time.
Hey, no worries.
Pleasure speaking to you.
Thanks, Chris.
Back to this weekend just gone. Loic first, Danny second, Troy third. Charlie Harrison with a wild ride in fourth.
Yeah, I've been mega impressed with the commitment he's come out with this year. I mean, last year he was consistent top 20, but he was never anything more. And this year he's just come out fighting. You can see in his riding style he's so aggressive. He looks so strong and just really hungry for it and riding incredibly well. So I was so stoked to see him up there. And I think everyone really enjoyed watching his run because it was just flat out. So I think he's definitely a good guy to watch this year.
And Matt Walker fifth?
Yeah, his first ever World Cup podium.
You could see how much it meant to him as well.
Yeah. He was sat in the hot seat as I was going up the gondola for my race run, so he must have been sat there for around 3 hours,
right,
just watching everyone come down. And to be honest, no one went faster until the last few guys. Yeah. So, yeah, long a wait for him in the hot seat, but well worth it.
So I think it was first World Cup podium for him and Charlie Harrison.
Yeah, both of them, yeah.
So Gwyn sixth.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
I don't think anyone expected that, really. He looked really strong in practice. He was just off the pace. Pretty much as simple as that, I think. We'll see. I don't think he'll stay in that position. I think he'll definitely come out fighting at the rest and he'll be right up there at the top.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Pierre on seventh.
Yeah.
He looked like it was a good run, that. It's weird that you think that Gwyn kind of off the pace, but then when I watched Pierron's run, I watched it back today, and Pierron's run looked
wasn't that a second or 2 seconds in the whole thing?
I say Aaron Gwyn's off the pace, Pierron's off the pace, but as you say, it was 1.2 seconds or 1 second.
Irrelevant.
That's like one mistake or
closest
one
race for a long time.
Yeah, so I mean, every weekend it's going to be changing. There's probably, you could name 10 riders who could win, so.
So Mark Wallace 8th, Laurie 9th, Dakota Norton 10th.
Yeah.
Finn Isles fastest on the first two sections, then lost the front.
Was he? Because I know they said that. Yeah. I looked on Roots and Rain and his top split was actually 5th. So
All right, okay.
I may be wrong. On Roots and Rain it said his top split was 5th, so I'm not sure if those stats were correct or not. But he was definitely flying, either way. He was definitely absolutely on it.
Did you see Brooke McDonald serve?
Yeah, crazy.
Two-wheel drift and then dabbed and pushed off.
He's just so determined to...
Marcelo did something a little bit further down, I think, as well, that was really, really similar.
Okay, yeah, I can't remember that, to be honest.
And then Vergier's crash.
That was a big crash, that.
Not a good weekend for the Santa Cruz boys, is it?
No, terrible.
No, they came out fighting last year and it's not the start they were after. I'm sure they'll fight back. Mm-hmm. And it's good job that Loris was come away from that crash injury free, because that was a nasty one.
Women's, Tani and Rachel's battle?
Yeah, it's going to commence all year, I think, that.
Yeah. Interesting stats from our teammate Neil White. He messaged us saying he looked at the women's winner versus the men's winner, and they're usually 15% back.
Okay.
Rachel's runner, Lenza Hyder, world champs last year, was exceptional. She was only 11.8 back.
Oh, no way.
But then in Maribor, Tani was 15.1 and Rachel was 15.6. So it wasn't that Rachel was, much slower than usual into second place. She just, Tani laid one down.
Yeah. I mean, between the percentage differences there between the men top result and the women top result is... comes down the track as well, that Lenz Eye is one of the less physical. It's still very physical, but it's not so physical as Marable. Marable, there's loads of big compression, so strength will come into it a lot more. But no, both them girls were flying, and I couldn't predict. It's a difficult one to predict what's going to happen all year. There, I'm sure they'll be battling all year.
They were really close, weren't they? Same this year. It was kind of noticeable how many great women riders there are. Tracy Hannah third, Miriam Caribou fourth. I think she had some of the fastest splits in training. Monica Resnick fifth.
And I think they'll all have a bit more competition when Valley Hall comes up.
The closest I've ever got to you is 14.3%.
So bad? When was that? When I was 12?
Mulfrey.
You had a good run at Mulfrey.
At Mulfrey in 2016. So, but then it's all about 50%.
Did you have a bad one at Mulfrey in 2015?
No, I think I had quite a good race then, actually. I think I ended up second in Scrum.
So junior men, Thibaut Duprat. He looks the real deal, doesn't
he? Yeah, he's a real nice guy and extremely talented on a bike.
Yeah.
You could say he's pretty much fully grown. He's a strong lad. That's not really a disadvantage, but his experience is definitely minimal compared to most of the other elite riders out there. So give him a couple of years and he's going to be dangerous for sure. Well, he already is, so... Yeah. Give him another couple of years and
I think I looked and his time would have been, like, say, top 20.
Yeah, I think he did an 05, which would have been borderline top 20. But the thing to take into consideration there is he had a noticeably more greasy track than the rest of the elites, because we went out for practice just after he had raced and the track was definitely, I would say, a good few seconds in the track there, so... For him to still put down such a good time in those conditions is crazy, yeah.
Brits, Jamie Edmondson was sixth, Luke Williamson eighth.
Yeah, that's. I know Jamie will want more, but it's a solid start to the season.
I think that was Luke Williamson's first year junior, and it's his first World Cup.
For Luke's first World Cup, and to go eighth is really good, because it's scary, I know. I remember it's scary coming from the UK as a first year junior and just been blown away by this big World Cup track where there's so many fast lads, so for him to come out with that result is really good.
Junior women, like you said, Valley Hall, she was 10 seconds up on Anna Newkirk and Millie Johnset.
Okay, yeah.
But I think she, I can't remember where she would have come in elite women, 8th or something like that, I think. She wasn't as good as results previously. Okay.
Well, they probably had, again, a wetter track, I would have thought, because the junior women's... again, I think they're before we start practice, and the girls don't race until after our practice, so the elite women, so they'd have had a drier track again.
Okay, we're pretty close to the end now, but before we wrap it up, it's time for a bit of fun with...
The Revolution Bike Park Big Questions.
Three questions. Let you go first, Binsley.
Question one, the Red Downhill question. What's your fantasy team this year?
For the first round...
Who did you have?
I had Tani and Rachel, simply because...
You knew it would be one or two.
Yeah, they score the same amount of points as the male, and I'm pretty sure most rounds they're going to be one or two.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a no-brainer, really. After that, unfortunately, that was all my money spent. So I had to pick and choose some of the cheaper male riders. I chose Max Hartenson, who's... 19-year-old from Germany. I've raced against him my whole career, and I think he's
writing these now.
He's looking sharp this year. Max Hartenson, I think you can pick him up for about 50 grand. So,
have you got yourself in your team?
I have indeed.
For
30 grand, I think that's a bit of a steal.
And
I had Magnus Madsen in as well, but unfortunately, him or Max didn't qualify. So I've had
qualifying 12th.
13 I had, which was 10 more than I had for the final, so,
Question two, the main line. You started out racing on the Revolution Bike Park team. When you moved on, we both joined the team. When we tell people about our time racing for Revolution, we usually qualify it with Joe Breeden was on the team. The question is, do you tell people you're on the same team as George Thompson and Richard Vins?
No, because I wasn't. It's a great team to be on.
Yeah.
Being able to ride there is just
done a lot, haven't
amazing. They? Yeah. They've helped me massively. And I was the, I think they started the team the year I joined, like it was the first year, and then after that you boys joined, didn't you?
Yeah.
They were so supportive through my, well, still are now, but since I've started, they've really, really.
It's the best bike park in the UK.
You still go there on a Friday and everybody's always there.
I know,
mate.
I turn up there and there'll be a handful of pros normally because it's just such good training for us and such mega fun. So, for me to only be 20 minutes away as well, it's like heaven, to be honest.
So, question three, the far side. What does G-up or die mean?
G-up or die.
Are you part of that gang?
No, I'm not really.
No.
It's a group of lads from around me. It's mainly Chaos, Cade, and Tanya, the big names around behind it. And there's quite a few others involved as well. But I think it's mainly just a brand they're starting, G-Up or Die. I think it's just go wild or die, basically. Just go mad and have fun. And
do you think you'll be G-ing up or dying this weekend, Ben?
I'm not sure.
That's
hopefully.
It. It's just a saying that they're trying to make into a brand, I think.
It's got
a lot of potential for sure. Look at what 50 to 1 have
achieved
with their brand there. So.
And what's the one, the other one from South Wales as well?
Oh, Daft Punk or Let's Have You, you mean?
Let's Have You.
Yeah, that's done crazily well for the owner. He's it's literally just, you know, clothing with the Let's Have You logo stuff on, and people are buying it simply because of the brand image, and so it's all marketing. It's how you make the image look, and if you do a good job on that side, I'm sure you'll sell some clothing and stickers or what else.
So, final bits. What are your hopes and aims for the rest of the season?
The goal for me is I want to win the national overall.
Right, okay, yeah.
I know.
How did you do in Riola?
I finished 7th, which was all right. I finished 2nd overall last year. Brayton just beat me.
Yeah.
So I'm in it to try and win the overall this year.
We'll be up at Fort William in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's it. I'm actually heading up on Monday to get some sneaky practicing.
You?
Yeah, do some testing.
Bring
and
Danny
stuff
Hart.
Like that. Yeah. Another goal is top 20 World Cup overall, which looked good until I crashed at the weekend. But no, that's still the same goal.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And to medal at national champs, which is on home turf, Revolution Bike Park. So
yeah, gotta take that one.
Yeah, that's it. They're my main goals this year, and I'll fight for them as hard as I can.
And social media links, where's the best place to follow you?
Instagram is my main activity. That's pretty much my only source, well, my main source of social media, really.
And what's your
Joe_Breeden17. Cool. So yeah, drop us a follow. That's cool. Me.
Cheers for coming on the show, Joe. We really appreciate it, and best of luck for the season.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on, boys. And
no props.
See you at the races.
Cool. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. If you made it this far, well done. With this being the first one, we'll probably all look back on it and think it was terrible, so things are only going to go one way from here. If you've got any feedback, though, please do drop us a message through on Instagram to @makingupthenumbersracing. Thanks again to our sponsors, Hope Technology, Revolution Bike Park, and singletrackworld.com. We'll be back with another episode after the Fort William World Cup. We'll end with the words of multiple Masters World Champion Alistair McLellan, who once told me, "The only thing we all have in common is that we're all going as fast as we can." See you next time.